Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat smiley face. Was I supposed to say that?
Yep.
I supposed to act that out?
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the China Shop. You made it. Get inside. We got a big fire sale today. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. We've just given Kyle a big promotion today. He's the new junior secret agent valet. Oh.
Dan, this is professional.
What?
Dan, this is a professional interview.
Oh, and we do those differently.
Yes, we do differentiate. We have Dr. George Adams with the CEO of VentrePoint.
Okay, let me put on my professional face.
Hello.
There he is. Okay, good. He is here.
Is that my cue to say something? Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. We had lots of good things going on, so it's always fun.
So, Dr. Adams, can you tell us a little bit more about VentrePoint? How long you've been with the company for almost 10 years at this point now, I understand?
Yes, that's right. It was located in Seattle, where the technology was developed, this artificial intelligence technology that allows us to look at a conventional echocardiogram and figure out a better way to analyze it and get more information out of the scans, the images. So that stuff was developed in Seattle, and the company invited me to come and be on the board, and then they just invited me to come be the CEO. And so we started putting equipment out and refining the technology, and then about 4 or 5 years ago, we moved it back to Canada because I'm a Canadian. And this is getting too expensive to compete with Google and Microsoft in Seattle for talent.
Right.
So we moved it back where we could get good talent and not go bankrupt in the process. Yeah.
I was stationed in Seattle for about 4 years when I was in the Navy. Very nice and wet.
all that liquid sunshine, as they call it.
I know, right? So where in Canada are you guys located now?
Toronto.
Yeah. Toronto. Okay. Well, that's a good spot to be.
Oh, yeah. Toronto's a great spot.
So I see that you, this is listed on your blog, that you've been the CEO of 7 different companies. And I think you also stated that all of those companies have made positive returns for their investors. That's one heck of a track record.
Yeah.
Why do you think you've been so successful?
Well, I don't give up. I think that's, the rule one for an entrepreneur is you can't give up, and I listen hard to what people tell me to do, and I make my own decisions, so I think that helps. I motivate the people who work for me. I mean, I always work on things that are life-sustaining or life-saving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big motivation, If you can communicate to your people, your shareholders as well as your employees, that we're on a mission here, and the mission for venture, like for example, The mission from VentryPoint is to make cardiac diagnostics better for everybody worldwide, and especially for children. Mm. And so, you know, because the only way you can get a really good analysis done of your heart, if you've got a bad right heart or a bad left atrium or right atrium, is an MRI. And you're 2 hours in the machine. So you can imagine being a kid or a toddler or even a baby. Even about 40% of adults don't make it to the end of the second hour in the MRI.
My wife couldn't do it.
I'm never reading one and I'm not about to do it. There's no way. Anyway, so the whole motivation here was to say, hey, you know, why can't you get, you know, you've got the same images, you're taking slices through the heart with MRI with a magnet, and you're taking slices through the heart with sound, why can't you just analyze the sound ones and get the same results as you get from an MRI? And so that was the kind of like, why can't you do that question? And we said, well, I don't see a problem with that if we use sophisticated algorithms. And so, sure enough, we were able to do that. The company was able to do that. I arrived 10 years ago when they kind of licensed the technology out of the University of Washington. We're trying to figure out how to commercialize it and put it into a real product. And so we've been at that for the last 10 years. We've run our third version of the product. It's now super user friendly. I've been through the FDA 3 times with it. First time they say it worked perfectly on right ventricle and it was equivalent to MRI, and they said it couldn't be done, and we did it.
Wow.
They were amazed. Second time was to say we want to expand it all 4 chambers of the heart. They said, okay. And we gave them the data. They said, yep, we're okay with that. And the third time was just minor modifications to the version 2 to go to get the version 3, but they were significant enough that we had to go back through the FDA and get their approval again. So it's been approved 3 times by the FDA. And the most amazing part I find, having been through this thing, like you said, 7 times, is the labeling we got. And we got a label that said the doctor can order up this test, our test, whether he wants, just because if he desires to get the information. I'd like to know that. Okay, you're ready to go. That's it. I tell that to analysts, because often analysts say, okay, well, what are the restrictions on the label of your product? And if you're going to invest in a company and you're really thinking hard about it, you should ask them that question. Like, what's the restrictions the FDA put on the use of your product? We have no restrictions. Zero.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wow.
Almost unheard of. So this is kind of fun. I mean, I've had 7 companies. I've always been therapeutic, diagnostic companies. The stuff I've created and commercialized has been used 300 million times in the last 35 years to extend people's lives. So, and I was the entrepreneur of the year in 2007. I got to go to Davos and hang out with the kings and the queens and the chairman of the board and Klaus, and got roasted as a super person who saved all these lives. And so,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So this one's close to my heart because I don't think children should be stuck in the MRI machines, anesthetized, basically put on a ventilator. We all know about ventilators now because of COVID.
Yeah.
Not fun things. But that's what you have to do to any kid below about 10 years old. You got to knock them out cold, put them on a ventilator, because every time you want to take a picture with the MRI, you got to stop them breathing. So you just clamp the tube on the ventilator, so you force them to stop breathing, and you take a picture of their heart.
Oh, my God, that sounds awful.
You do that for 2 hours. And if the kid makes it through, now you know what's wrong with their heart. We get that all done in 5 minutes. Well, no ventilators, and you also get injected with contrast media. So no ventilators, no anesthetic, no contrast media, no lying dead still for 2 hours. You still have to hold your breath when you take.
So how long does it take to set up and get the initial images? Is that just the same thing as doing like an X-ray or an EKG?
It's the same as 2D ultrasound. So standard 2D ultrasound exam of your heart. Your guys are probably too young to have ever had it done. But it's 16 views. It takes about 25 minutes usually to get all the views. You don't need all the views to depending on what you're going after. If you're going after, simply going after the left ventricle, you need 3 or 4 views. That can take, 3 or 4 minutes. And then you can do the analysis. The analysis takes 2 or 3 minutes. Our expert users can get it done in under 2 minutes.
How long does it take to train a user?
That's the fun part, because it's so intuitive that it takes us maybe 2 hours to go from being someone who...
Wow.
And I always have fun with this, like, the cardiologists, you know, have spent years learning, looking at hearts and trying to imagine what hearts look in three dimensions and all that sort of stuff. And I always say that the fastest people we can train are artists.
Right.
Because artists intuitively think in three dimensions, right? So, we've trained artists in 20 minutes. That's like, yeah, they go, oh yeah, I know what a heart looks like. Oh yeah, here, ding, 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 done. Yeah, so your average cardiologist is 2 or 3 hours. Your average artist, 2 or 3, you know, half an hour. Yeah.
Do you have anybody that pushes back on it because they're so used to looking at the other charts? Or does everyone seem to really enjoy it?
No, it's the same. The difference here is that, you know, like when they go to analyze a normal 2D, let's say they were trying to figure out a volume for the left ventricle, they would go in and actually trace the border between the wall of the heart and the blood. I mean, they would go out and trace it. So, you know, depending on how good their hand-eye coordination is, they would do a pretty good or bad job tracing that. Often the images are sort of blurry in certain parts of the frame of the view. You know, the top half is just a big blur of the bottom half. You can draw the bottom half, and then after that, you just guess at the top half, right? But the art system, because of the AI, you go in and just put a couple of dots on the bottom half. You go to the next view, you put a couple of dots on whatever looks is crispy, and you know exactly what's on the other. By the time you finish three or four views, and you got 8 or 9 dots, then the system will kick in and give you an absolutely precise size and shape for that chamber of the heart.
I watched the video that you guys have on your website showing kind of the walkthrough of how to use that. So I'll put a link to that in the description in case anyone wants to check it out. It is really, really interesting to see.
Yeah. So it doesn't take long to train people to do it. You get them exactly. They're the only people in the world certified by the FDA and CE mark and Canada and China to give you exactly the same results as you get from MRI, both ejection fraction, you know, largest volume, smallest volume, and all the, and to be just as, in terms of accuracy, and just be just as precise as an MRI. So, and that's another big difference between our system and standard analysis of ultrasound. Is you get, you know, you get plus or minus 20%, depending on who does it. For standard analysis, we get like plus or minus 2%. So, like everybody picks out the same high fidelity spots. Everybody goes, oh, there, I can see the wall and the blood there, here, here. Nobody goes into the fuzzy zone and tries to guess where the wall is in there. So you get very good reproducibility person to person, and you get very good reproducibility to the MRI.
So yeah, so if two different people look at it, they come up with the same image.
Yeah, and that's one of the great advantages of the system. When we talk to, you know, large cardiac centers who have, you know, 2 dozen sonographers and a dozen cardiologists, they're like, you know, they open up the file and they go, oh, I see Sam did this one. It's like, oh boy. And tell as soon as they open the file who did the analysis. And then yet they do it, put our system in, and they open it up and they go, I don't know who did this, but it's perfect. And that makes a big difference, because actually the variability right now between one exam to the next exam. So, you know, if you've got a chronic heart problem, heart failure, ischemic heart failure, congestive heart failure, you got a valve problem, regurg valve, if you're born with a heart problem, congenital heart disease, you're going to get looked at every 6 to 12 months for the rest. And right now the doctors don't look back and say, well, how was your heart looking 6 months ago? Because they go, oh, who knows what. Who did that analysis? Who knows? There's no point in even beginning to look at it. I'll just take the snapshot of what I got today. I'll analyze it. I'll figure it out. Well, what a waste of time. And so if you actually have the kind of precision that we provide, we can go back and look, you know, 10 years ago and say, okay, this is what the heart was like 10 years ago. Oh, well, let's look at exactly what's happened over the last 10 years. Oh, I see what's happened to this heart. And so, you know, you can actually take advantage of all this historical data. And there's like a billion cardio echograms sitting in data files, archival files all over the world. That's a billion chunks of data that you could use to figure out a bit more about.
And then you can go ahead and just grab all those and make a new image, even though the image may have been taken 10 years ago.
So we're working on an automated tool that would just go in there, into an archive, and just chunk through it, and you know, do the and then, you know, build those trend lines. So when the patient came in, you just punch in George, and up would come the last 10 years of all my echocardiograms and exactly what's been going on in my heart, instead of looking at the one you did today and say, maybe it doesn't. That's what they do now. Yeah, so there is a lot of improvement, which is our mission is to improve cardiac diagnostics worldwide for everyone, especially children.
Sounds like it's changed quite a bit over the last decade. And I should mention, too, I don't know if we said this already, this is the VMS Plus system that you guys have developed, correct?
Yeah, VMS Plus 3.0. It's it's the latest version. We've got it in, 16 hospitals worldwide, and they're using it on all sorts of patients, COVID patients, cancer patients, heart failure patients, children, adults, all that stuff. So, we're early in the game here because, we just didn't announce not too long ago an alliance with General Electric Health.
Yep. I've got them in my notes to quiz you on some more later.
Well, the point is, GE's got 500,000 ultrasound machines placed worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we don't sell ultrasound machines. We just sell our system, which is an adapter, basically turns your ultrasound machine into an MRI.
Oh.
So for $50,000, you can turn your $300,000 ultrasound machine into a $3 or $4 million MRI.
Wow.
For an extra $3,000. That's basically what we do. And so they're going to jump in here and start selling it worldwide. And, and then we're going to need it because, I don't know if you saw in New England, there was an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine 2 weeks ago by a public health professor from Harvard, mm-hmm. who said that his best guess was there was going to be end up with 15 million people with long COVID in the United States when this COVID thing gets out. And they'll all have heart problems.
Wow. That's terrible.
And that we're going to be dealing with 15 million people with a chronic heart problem induced by COVID on top of all the regular.
Right.
There are just not enough ultrasound systems out there to do that, to deal with that many people. So we have to speed up the analysis and speed up mm-hmm. the accuracy. There's no way you're going to put 15 million people. There aren't enough MRI machines in the United States or in the whole world to do a reasonable analysis on 15 million people. So,
and hopefully it makes it more affordable for people too.
Well, it is. I mean, MRI are like $3,000 or $4,000, right? And, this is, the reimbursement, echoes are $200 or $300. So, it's an order of magnitude cheaper than an MRI and an order of magnitude faster and just as accurate. So, we're in the right place at the right time because the world's going to need a better way to follow all these people with long COVID. We saw this movie 15 years ago with SARS, coronavirus disease. And we're still, 15 years later, we're still dealing with the 10% of people that got SARS who now still have chronic heart and lung problems. So hopefully COVID won't be, I think that's actually the same number that the professor Harvard used, about 10% end up with chronic problems. So I don't think it's going to be that bad, but I'm not a professor at Harvard. So. What do I know?
Well, yeah, anybody gets, I think one person getting that's in too much for getting sick with basically a flu.
Well, in the UK, they're set up 40 dedicated clinics now in the UK for long COVID. They're setting them up in the United States everywhere, Cedar Sinai. Where did I read? I read something yesterday about them setting up a new center in Calgary. Actually, in Calgary, they've just set up a center specifically for COVID patients, a heart center. So it's pretty well known within the cardiology community that they're going to be swamped with these.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have a competitor called TomTech. I think that's the Philips version.
Yes.
But it also doesn't sound like it's quite nearly as capable or reliable as yours. Are there any other platforms besides VMS that can actually, hang with it, that can do what you can do? Or are you the cutting edge leader?
No, everybody went to, conventional image analysis type techniques, TomTech. TomTech was bought by Philips 4 years ago. They've been working on trying to bring out a system that works on 3D echo, not 2D. Mm-hmm. Nobody can do 2D. We're the only ones. And 2D is what's used worldwide. Nobody uses 3D for clinical purposes because you still get too blurry. The images are too blurry and they're incomplete. You don't get the whole heart in the, 3D is you take one holographic picture of the heart. Well, the way the probes are and the angles and everything, if you have any kind of enlargement of your heart, of any of your chambers, you can't get it all in the hologram. So now you're back where we started here. You get halfway around the right ventricle and oops, there's nothing there. Anybody's guess where this heart goes? Well, our system is able to fill in that because we're working on a artificial intelligence system and we have a catalog of hearts which have all sorts of different shapes and we have this really good algorithm that tells you how to fill in the gaps. We're able to get the results. In fact, I was amazed. There's a study they just published out of Germany. A fellow gave him the prototype software for the 3D product, and he did, I think, 500 hertz with it. And he was able to get exactly, you know, MRI and 3D, and he was able to get the right answer on 75% of them. So that's clinically significant. If you can get the right answer on 75%, get an answer on 75%. You always got the right answer, but he got an answer on 75%. By the other 25%, there was just too much. It was just too blurry, and you couldn't figure out anything. But that's pretty impressive, and that's enough to get it into the clinical arena. So TomTech's been working on trying to do that for 25 years, and they still haven't gotten it to work. And, I think, when Philips bought them, I thought they would have had the resources to go after this. But again, they're using the wrong approach. They're using conventional image analysis, and the images are just too blurry too often to work with conventional image analysis. Now they're adding AI into it, and the images are getting better. I mean, Siemens, Philips, GE are spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year trying to make the hardware better, trying to make the images better, trying to clear up the noise. So maybe 20 years from now, they'll have good enough images that the conventional image analysis will work. But it's not there yet. So we're the only game in town right now.
Well, did I hear, I think I've heard rumors, or maybe that was a press release that you guys had, that you're in talks with Philips to maybe help them with their TomTech? Is there any truth to that?
Well, we're trying to open a discussion with Philips. We're working on it. I work for Pfizer. I work for DuPont. I mean, there's a lot of NIH, not invented here, kind of psychology, right? So, Philips paid a lot of money for TomTech, and it's going to take a lot of, swallowing for them to admit that they got it wrong.
If they would have done it earlier, they wouldn't be in that boat.
They're going to have to bite the bullet and come and open discussion. So we're in the process, and with Siemens as well. GE was the first ones to step up and say, yeah, we agree. We're never going to get this. This is never going to work the way we've been going at it for the last 10 years. And you guys have figured it out. So yeah, let's form a partnership. Let's go. So, we've got that product fully integrated into their platform, and we have a few more steps to validate it and become a certified vendor for GE. Involved big company process to become a certified vendor, but we're ISO certified, FDA certified, all that stuff. So and when we get done, we'll launch, and so we'll be able to, GE has, I said, 500,000 machines worldwide. So they got lots of customers. Won't take long before we start deploying these things in hundreds. And that's good. The faster we get it done, the faster we change the stupidity that's going on right now.
So back to the agreement with GE. So you've basically almost finalized it. You just have a couple more things left to do. Is that the final acceptance testing?
Yeah, final acceptance testing by them. And GE is just, it's a big company. They move at their pace.
Yep, I'm familiar.
their launch budget for the first 3 months is going to dwarf my entire budget the next 3 years. so far it's been a great relationship so far.
Once you do get that final acceptance testing, how long do you think it'll be before you start to see the sales from that agreement on your financial statements?
I really don't know. We've really been asked not to talk about timing.
Okay.
To me, they consider that a competitive piece of information. they really want to go out there and blow the doors off of their competition.
Right.
And all I can tell you is they budgeted to be a hell of a party. it's going to be a splash for sure. We're the prime thing they're bringing out. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how their salespeople react to it. We still have, train their salespeople, but, we'll get to that. Like I said, we can train a cardiologist in 2 hours, and it won't take us long to train a salesperson. Mm-hmm. Well, so some of the other applications, like the applications are for cancer. You know, I think one of the things people don't realize is, you know, like 30% of people who go through chemotherapy or radiotherapy or immunotherapy mm-hmm. for cancer come out the other side with such a damaged heart that they have a chronic heart problem for the rest of their life.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah. In fact, the American Heart Association, you know, has now put out a formal scientific statement, their first ever, if you can imagine, saying that if you've been through chemotherapy and you're on the other side of that, you need to go see a cardiologist every 6 months for the rest of your life because you're more likely to die from a heart problem than a cancer.
Wow.
And, you know, they crunched all the data to be able to say that statement, make that statement. So, so cancer is a big application.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when you think about it, you know, we've been using the same three drugs for cancer for 30 years. And, you know, they basically poison.
Yeah.
Poison your body for a week, and then they give you 2 weeks to recover, and then they do it all over again. And, you know, then it's cells that are most rapidly metabolizing and growing and working hard that are most affected by this poison.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the hardest working cells in your body are your heart cells. So it's not surprising that while you're killing the cancer, you're also killing your heart. So, you know, I think we have a machine, MD Anderson, and they're working hard to figure out, you know, if we can sort these people early and, you know, do something to the chemotherapy or at least monitor them more carefully and adjust the medications afterwards so that they can offload the heart. And again, a lot of it's right heart problems, not left heart. Because if you're being, obviously you have a lung cancer, the right side of the heart pumps the blood through your lungs and over to the left side of the heart, and left side pumps it out to the rest of your body. So, you know, if you get any kind of back pressure on your right side, it goes into heart failure pretty quickly. You can die from right heart failure just as quickly as you can die from left heart failure. So, you know, you have to look after your right heart. And once we're the only game that can actually look at your right heart quickly, easily, repetitively, over and over again, and tell you what's going on. In a cost-effective manner. So that's, we just have to keep deploying these things and getting the key opinion leaders to talk about them at conferences and everything. And we're really hopeful GE is going to be able to accelerate that process pretty significantly.
Yeah, it sounds like you shouldn't have any trouble, or it sounds like that was a really good agreement to partner up with GE.
I Pfizer bought one of my companies. I spent 2 years in business development for Pfizer, buying companies and doing deals and whatever. And, you know, and I spent 6 years at University of Toronto setting up companies and doing licensing and all that stuff. So I've seen a lot of deals. This one in GE is pretty damn good. I mean, I'm not allowed to talk about the details, but I can tell you that, you know, the few details I have, I've given off to some of my buddies who are in the biz dev world saying, "Boy, that's a hell of a deal." I think you have to, you know, whenever you're trying to do a deal, you have to understand what the other guy's motivation is. And, you know, it's all public domain. I mean, you can look at GE's, you know, record of innovation in ultrasound in the last 50 years, and there hasn't been any. Okay. So, the last 10 years, 15 years, there's been no innovation in ultrasound, cardiac ultrasound in the last 15 years from anybody, not just GE, Siemens, Philips, anybody. Okay, we're doing the same stuff we were doing 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they put all their hopes and prayers and everything into 3D, and it just has turned out to be too tough a problem the electronics just aren't there yet. So, you know, they need something to say, hey, this is something new. And all the clinicians in the world are looking for something new too, because they have bunches of, you know, hundreds of patients who they've been following for years, and they're still scratching their head about what's going on with their hearts. I always say, you know, the American Heart Association meets every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the largest medical conferences in the world. I think like 60 or 70,000 people. There are only a couple places in the United States, like the Astrodome or Houston or Dallas, or places where big enough convention center and enough hotels to hold the conference. And every year there's, you know, 5,000, 6,000 abstracts papers given by people who've worked for a year or 2 years or 3 years doing studies on people trying to figure out some aspect of the heart. And for every abstract that gets presented at the American Heart, I was a scientist for several years before I became an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And I presented at American Heart. And for every abstract that's accepted at American Heart, there's 10 of them get rejected.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and this has been going on for 75 years. So, what is going to happen next year? So if you think we know what's going on with the heart, guess it's
right.
There are 50,000 abstracts going to go pouring into the American Heart this year to be presented again from all these research groups trying to figure out yet one more time some aspect of the heart.
You have, I think, about 124 scientific publications to your name?
Yeah, something like that.
What are the topics of those mostly? Is it?
I was an expert in blood surface interactions and neural thrombogenesis, thromboembolism.
Okay.
I was an expert in artificial organs. So I did artificial hearts, drug-eluting coronary stents, endovascular grafts, heart valves, apheresis machines, blood storage, all that kind of stuff. So anything where the blood would contact a foreign surface and start clotting and create all sorts of grief, that was my specialty. So I wrote all the reviews and wrote a lot of stuff on that. I was actually the most well-funded scientist in Canada when I decided to quit being a scientist and become an entrepreneur. And my wife said, "Well, what?" You spent 2 years going to university to get a PhD, and you spent 2 years postdocing, and you spent 10 years becoming an associate professor, and now you're going to go do something else. But anyway, it's worked out.
So, well, when you made that transition, what made you make that leap? Were you trying to take one of your ideas and turn it into reality, or was it another company that you just found that you're just good at leading?
No, there was a cardiac surgeon, Willie Keelan, who came to me and said he wanted to build an artificial heart. Mm-hmm. And he wondered if, and I thought, wow, there's a challenge for all my skills. I mean, I was trained as a fluid mechanics engineer, mass transfer engineer. Obviously a world authority on blood surface interactions and biomaterials. And I thought, boy, there's a challenge worthy of all my training to do. So I said, I'll take that on. So, of course, the first thing I did was raise, Willie said, great. First thing I do is raise the money. And I didn't know how to raise money. I'd been a professor and a scientist all my life. I had no idea how to raise money. So, but sometimes what you don't know is a good thing. And so I didn't know enough to know it should have been heard. So anyway, I dug in, and 8 weeks later, I'd raised $22 million from a whole bunch of different sources, government sources.
And that's not knowing what you're doing?
And I started up World Heart with that $22 million and built the prototype machine heart. And that's that device. World Heart's now been put in, I think, 7,000 people as bridge to transplants.
Wow.
And there's now, they're doing destination implants now.
You raised $22 million in 8 weeks, and you didn't know how to fundraise.
That's correct. Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Like I said, sometimes you just don't know you're so dumb you don't realize how hard it is. I think that kind of is part of my philosophy of life, you shouldn't don't ever limit yourself. Let someone else limit you. So, don't ever say, I can't do that. Just go do it and let someone else say, told you so, right? Who cares?
Right.
I mean, fear of failure is a really endemic problem that you need to get rid of. I mean, and part of that, part of fear of failure is, you get blasted if you fail, right? So part of my management style is, my secretary used to call it the, there are no consequences talk. But whenever I hire people to work for me, I'd say, okay, here's the story. Okay. You're empowered to do this. This is your job, whatever. Okay. If I'm not around, you can't find me. You make the decision. Whatever decision is, I'll back you up. And, if the shit hits the fan, I'm standing in front of it. You're not going to get hurt. Okay. I said, but one condition, if you ever come to me and say, I made that decision because I thought that's what you wanted. Done.
Right.
I said, I'm stepping away from the plan. And so you empower people and you say, and then whenever people, things happen, people make the wrong decisions. Things blow up. Even I make the wrong decisions and blow up my face too. Whatever.
That's almost like a systemic problem in today's industry. That's something that I've always had to deal with when I was still working for the steel mill, is that I used to manage a group of electricians. And my big thing was, as long as you were making the decision for the right reason, I'd back you up.
Yeah.
But if I have to make the decision for you, then one of us is not necessary.
Well, so it works very well. I mean, my daughters have great teams, and they've gone out and made decisions, and things happen, and I've backed them up, and they all appreciate it. So, I mean, for whatever reason, I've been successful in being able to bring these products through the whole development cycle and into the commercial phase, and then sell the companies for profits to all my shareholders. So, you know, it's a team effort.
Yep.
I always say, when entrepreneurs ask me, well, how does it work? I say, well, you need a good story and you need a better storyteller. So I look for good stories, and I'm a very good storyteller. So yes. I just dig in, and you know, and so that's my magic power or whatever.
I want to circle back real quick to what you said about not being afraid of failure. Have you had any failures? I assume you have, you know, trying to being part of 30 different companies that you've kind of helped start.
Oh, yeah. But yeah.
What would you say your biggest was?
I never had a failure for the CEO when I was being CEO, but I've had lots of failures where I've been on the board and the CEO just didn't get it or wasn't that motivated, or the technology was based on something which was not properly vetted, you know. So yeah, there's lots of failures out there. I mean, it's like any, you know, venture capital. You do 10 deals, you know, you got, you know, 6 of them are outright failures. 2 of them are walking dead, as we call them, and the other 2, you get one success and one raving success and one okay success. But that's all enough. That's enough to give you your 33% ROI. So, you know, it's, you got to bet. That's why you got to bet on doing something really meaningful. I mean, I think
right. The
other thing is, I would say, you know, don't be afraid of failure. And the other half of that is, don't be afraid of risk. And the other thing is, pick on something that's going to be meaningful. Because, I mean, if at the end of the day you spend 5 years of your life trying to getting something to work and it works, and all it does is move the needle, half an inch forward, that's not going to satisfy. You're not going to walk away thinking, wow, I did it, right? Pick on something like me. I pick, you know, make an artificial heart.
Right.
Small project. I got spinning 7,000 people. You know, I said, let's try and make a drug-eluting coronary stent. And it worked. You know, Boston Scientific bought it. They put it in 10 million people or something. Now they're better ones, so they don't use mine anymore. But that's okay. I created artificial medium for platelet storage. I mean, how dumb can you get? Like, you know, doesn't sound very exciting. The bloody stuff gets used 10 million times in a year to plasma off and put it back in platelets and resuspend them, you know, and get all this extra plasma. I think it's like $1 billion a year of plasma they get off by replacing it with a salt solution that I created 30 years
ago. Wow.
You know, so, I mean, it's like, if you're going to do, just because, and everybody told me that was impossible. I used to say to my boss, she'd say, I think we should do this. I'd say, do you think it's impossible? And she would say, why? Say, because if it's not impossible, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. Well, yeah, if it's a medium, she actually said, I think it's impossible. I said, okay, then I'm going to do it.
Nice.
I think if you're going to do something, pick on something that's impossible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That other people think is impossible. Because, especially if you're doing something in healthcare and you're trying to save lives or build some. I've always been in healthcare. Yeah. I mean, people think you're a hero anyway. If you fail, then people are good for trying. If you succeed, well, people think you're a magician.
You mentioned the selling multiple companies. Is that the long-term plan with VenturePoint? Are you planning to?
Well, I don't think there's any way around it. I mean, Siemens, Philips, and GE own the space. The three big companies, they own the space because they buy anybody and anything that looks new and exciting.
Well, it's easier for them than actually trying to develop anything, right?
Well, yeah, and they're all competing on market share, and, you know, they all got the same stuff, you know. So, you know, it's like Ford, Chrysler, and Chevy, all General Motors, all competing. Like, you know, my car's better than yours, whatever. So they're all trying to get something new into the thing. So, they look different, right? So, and as I said, last 10, 15 years, there's really been nothing come through the pipe that's new. So we're pretty pretty new, pretty exciting. The ability to do this is so unique. Yeah, I think that we'll get taken out. All they're waiting for is some kind of an adoption curve, you know. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, that's when you get to, obviously, I told you I worked for acquisitions for Pfizer, so I did call up the guys at GE and say, what's it going to take to, what would I have to look like for you to engage and,
right,
and contemplate acquiring me? And they said, you need about 80 to 100 sites using your stuff and saying nice things about you.
And then if GE can do that for you and put your stuff in all their sites, then that even seems better.
I out of the 500,000 GE's got, I think they probably come up with 100 pretty quick. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, it will get acquired. Whether it'll happen, how quickly it'll happen, I don't know. The good news is, we had an exceptionally fantastic good year.
Mm-hmm.
We got all our debt converted. We got all our warrants exercised, and we have two to two and a half years worth of cash sitting in the bank.
Yep, I saw that.
So we have all the money we need to hit that 80 to 100 installed adoption curve, even without GE's help. But GE is going to do it anyway. So
I've got a question from the StockTwit community here that wanted to ask how you look at the value of the product to an acquirer. They said that $200 million has been stated in the past, but they want to know if 4D wouldn't add more value.
Oh, I think 4D will, absolutely. The feedback we're getting from the expert panel of top cardiologists from around the world who are looking at this stuff and advising us exactly how to, what kind of measurements to make and everything, and what kind of patients use it on. And three or four out of that panel have already got the alpha prototype and are using it on cases in their institution as a research.
Oh, so you're basically testing 4D now at this point.
Yeah, so there.
Wow.
Every time they do another patient, they're getting more and more excited about what kind of information they're getting.
Mm-hmm. From
motion analysis, 4D motion analysis. When the heart pumps, it twists, and people don't ever characterize the twist.
No, I didn't know that.
It's kind of like ringing. So the high pressure point, the high pressure, the last, 120 over 80, that 120, 130, 140, whatever pressure beat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is the heart twisting, just like you would wring water out of a towel.
Huh.
The heart pumps as much as it can, and then it gives a little twist to get that last little pump, to get that last little blood out there too, before the valve closes and the sort of cycle all over again. And so people don't characterize, that twist, but that's, there's actually was a study done about 4 weeks ago in COVID patients, and they were able to correlate death, likelihood of death, to twist.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, really?
Unless the heart was able to do that last ringing at the end, the more likely the patient was to die from COVID. So they're now talking about doing that as a triage type thing. The way they characterize it, the twist was, juvenile, but anyway, we now have filed a patent on that process, on properly characterizing the twist of the heart and a number of other motion things.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I think we're going to bring that out. That'll revolution. Again, that's going to add a lot of new information to the cardiologists in the world about what's going on with any particular heart. And maybe, it'll take a couple of years before they figure out how to sort people and treat them differently based on that twist parameter, but it'll come.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned COVID a few different times.
Well, you said the question was about value.
Mm, yeah.
How do I see the final valuation?
Yeah.
I think where it stands today,
mm-hmm.
it's probably worth $200 or $300 million once the adoption curve is validated. I think start adding in 3D, the ability to analyze 3D automatically, which we've already got a prototype doing that. We already can analyze 3D. We're just training the conventional AI to do.
That's the going back and looking at the records?
No, that's for 3D. So that's about, okay, so right now when you do, worldwide you do 2D ultrasound, it takes about 25 minutes to get the standard 16 views of your four acoustic windows and four views from each window. Right? So you got to move the probe around your chest. You've got to get the goop on there. You got it. The operator's got to figure out the best look, and then twiddle and focus it and twiddle the knobs and all that and get the best picture, and then do it again 16 times. So, we aren't going to have the luxury of doing that going forward. The value of 3D is you put the probe, just under your sternum, and you go click, and you get a 3D holographic picture. It takes 5 seconds, right? Ka-ching.
Right.
So you take that 25 to 30 minute scanning image and capture process, and you reduce it to 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can put a lot more people through the echo lab. That's the simple fact. COVID is generating a mountain more people who need to go through the COVID lab on a regular basis.
Right.
You know, so the world's going to need 3D to become a clinical tool. Well, the reason it's not a clinical tool today is because you don't get a good enough image often enough, a complete good enough image, clear enough image often enough.
Right.
So we don't need complete images. We don't need good images. We can do that analysis on 75 to 80% of the 3Ds as they exist today.
Hmm.
And that means you can convert your whole echo lab over to 3D and start doing, you know, 15 patients an hour instead of two.
Yeah, that's impressive.
So when that kicks in, then we're a multi-billion dollar company very quickly.
What's the time frame on that? I'm sure people are going to ask.
I'm trying to get the study organized to show feasibility. Mm-hmm. That complete image good enough often enough question is a feasibility study. So I'm trying to get a feasibility study off the ground in a couple of major centers. But, you know, COVID just makes everything so difficult. Right?
It's kind of a double-edged sword for you guys, it sounds like.
It is. And it's like, you know, we've got the whole system fully, you know, remote now. We remotely install it, remotely calibrate it, remotely train people to use it, remotely do QC and all that on it. But but we still, you know, we still need the hospital to be functioning so they can generate a purchase order. So
right.
Do all that. You know, we still need the, you know, the receiving department to receive the product and not say it's not COVID, go away. COVID-related, go away, right? Yeah. So it might take a little longer, but we'll get there. I don't see anything on the horizon that's even remotely close to being competitive. So, and, you know, we've been doing this. I've been at this for 10 years. The company's been at it for 15 years. We haven't ever seen anything remotely competitive in 15 years. And so unless there's an absolute breakthrough in the image quality of 3D,
mm-hmm.
so conventional image analysis techniques like TomTec, Philips will work, there's, you know, nobody's going to get anywhere close to doing what we do.
Yep. I hope you hold out for that billion.
Well, there's your opportunity. So we want to, the blue sky opportunity is hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So actually there was just a study published again in the New England Journal from China showing that if you aggressively, once more, it's just like one more study, but this is kind of interesting, you know, aggressively treat hypertension. So they took elderly Chinese people who had blood pressure of 130 or more and tried to bring them down to 120 or 110. And looked at the difference between getting them down, you know, 10 millimeters of mercury versus 20.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, you know, there's a significant difference between how many people died in the next 4 years versus whether they brought them down from 130 to 120 versus 120 to 110.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when I was getting my doctorate, normal was 120 over 80.
Right.
That's now hypertension.
Oh, what? I thought that's not normal anymore.
Oh, that's hypertension. We changed the definition of hypertension 2 years ago worldwide. So it used to be 130 over 90. Now it's 120 over 80.
Sounds like I need to go back to the doctor. It's been a little while.
So they're saying you've got to get your blood pressure down below 120 to 110 if you really want to limit your risk of dying from a major adverse cardiac event like a heart attack or a stroke or something.
Right.
In the next 5 years. And so so the problem is, how do you, you know, how do you get an accurate and reliable blood pressure measurement?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same, you know, it's the same thing. You go in there, you go to the doctor's office, you walked up a flight of stairs, you sit down in the chair, you're supposed to sit there for 5 minutes and totally chill out. And
well, even just the stress of getting your blood pressure taken causes some people to spike. Yeah.
I mean, they're like, okay, get out of the chair in the waiting room, sit down here. First thing to do is take your blood pressure. You're not sitting there for 5 minutes, believe me. The first thing you do is...
No, I know.
And, you know, and then you've got white coat hypertension, which is you're excited because you're at the doctor or you're sick already. Because, you know, you got a temperature or whatever, so your heart rate's up anyway. Anyway, so the whole bottom line is the doctor measures 130 over 90 and says, I don't think you have real hypertension. You're just excited because you're here. Go home.
Right.
I'm not going to medicate you. Wrong. Right.
So
it turns out that the volume of your left atrium, and again, what we measure is volume and shape.
Mm-hmm.
Volume of your left atrium is correlated to your, you know, your average blood pressure for the last 3 months. So it's by simply measuring the volume of your left ventricle as an index to your body weight, mass. You can determine whether somebody actually has hypertension or doesn't.
Really?
Over the last 3 months.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So the question becomes, how do we, and so we can, and so simply two orthogonal views, two 2D views, and we can accurately calculate the volume of your left atrium. And the reason I told you the answers would get longer as we got more into that.
That's fine. That's all fascinating.
So you understand a little bit of the physiology of the heart. In the last 20% of that kick is not only the heart twisting to give you that last bit at the end of the cardiac cycle, systole, but it's also the left atrium kick helps the left ventricle out, and it gives a little extra crunch at the end too. Mm-hmm. So left atrium is very sensitive to what the peak blood pressure is, because it's fighting that peak blood pressure at the last 20% of the pulse. And so that's why it's so sensitive. And it doesn't recover as fast as the left. It's a relatively thin muscle. And so it doesn't recover as fast as the left ventricle. So left ventricle can be stretched and recover, almost instantly, whereas the left atrium stretches. And, every time you have a hypertensive series of events, it stretches and it takes a while to come back. So if you have them too often, it gets stretched and stays stretched. Mm-hmm. So I want to enable every doctor in the world, every GP in the world, to measure left atrial volume and really start stratifying people for hypertension.
Right.
And that would take, and there was a study done at Columbia University a number of years ago that said it would take, in 2013, it would have taken $8 billion out of the U.S. healthcare if they simply found the people who really had hypertension and gave them a diuretic, a 20-cent-a-day pill. They would take $8 billion out of the healthcare system by doing that. And I'm sure they can double that and triple that number by now. And that was before high blood pressure, 120 over 80.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure that number is higher now.
It's probably 40 or 50 billion now. So that's, to me, that's the home run, is to have an automated system that measures left atrial volume sitting in every pharmacy, every doctor's office, and find the people who have hypertension, give them a 20 cent a day diuretic pill, make them go to the bathroom 3 or 4 times a day, and they don't end up in the emergency ward with a heart attack.
Ah, fascinating stuff. Man, I only got a couple more questions from StockTwits I wanted to try to get through, but...
Go for it. Yeah.
All right. Well, one of them is asking for some more details about your China partnership, how and when you expect that to bear any fruit.
Yes, well, China, I always say I never put a timeline in China in the same sentence.
Yeah.
China is its own world, right? I mean, to me, China's a little bit, once they get going, it'll overwhelm us, but just anything done in China. I mean, they're building out their distribution network. They've got approvals. Our joint venture partners are raising money. They raised, I think, $5 or $10 million a month ago. Putting the money in the bank account. Now they're ready to go. They've built up the distribution network. They've got the prototype. They've got the devices in eight top hospitals and 8 provincial capitals in China. And they've been using them for a while. So they are, and they're working on a major contract with the government for the government to buy hundreds of these machines and deploy them across China in areas. The thing to realize about China is they've got twice as much heart disease as we do.
Really?
The average admission rate in a hospital in China for cardiovascular diagnostics were 24%. We're at 13 to 14% here in North America. So they have twice as many people in the hospital for cardiac heart than we do. And that's well known. And they've got all this, they just can't control the Chinese people, and they have these risk factors, right? They're all overweight. They have bad air. They've all got diabetes. They've got all the risk, all top 4 risk factors. And so they got twice as much heart disease there. So, they know they got to do something about it. And now COVID is kicking, if COVID kicks in there, boy, it's going to be a real mess.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that this year, they've given us sales projections for this year, which are significant as well for the next four quarters, not the calendar year.
Right.
And, if they hit them, then we'll be seeing significant revenues coming our way.
Do you have any concerns over China trying to, reverse engineer your process?
I don't really, because, we took us a decade to build those databases. They're all encrypted and everything. I mean, I'm sure if China can hack the Pentagon, they can hack us. But, I think that you have to understand, the JB partner we're in is one of the original Long March family, group. And so they all put each other. They've gone through the appropriate channels to make sure that they are aligned with the right people so that other people in China, you know, don't steal. You know, they have their own system there to figure out who gets that. Our technology and our opportunities have been assigned to the right people.
Good.
They've got the right steward, and if anybody steps on them, they're going to whack them. So I don't think that's the way it works in China. So I think we're, you know, we got the right partner. We're just, you know, it's just everything in China takes forever.
All right, last question I got from the Stock Twits community. They'd like to know more about Dr. Makanovic. They said there's like just a small blurb on the website about her. I think they were trying to get me to get her on the show with us, but
we should fix that. There's a wonder worker. I mean, she's incredibly clever. You know, she worked for many years at a patent group, so she's very sensitized to building our intellectual property policy. Mm-hmm. She's an expert at regulatory, so she's the one who, you know, we've been through the FDA, Health Canada, China, Europe three times, and every time they just put it in and just goes through. So and she's, you know, we're all on side with ISO and FDA, GMP, all that stuff. So she's miraculously good at all that stuff she does. She runs the company, leaves me free to do these kind of interviews and things.
We're making good use of their time.
I can't say anything more. I mean, I guess we should upgrade her bio on if people want.
Yeah, they'd like to know just a little bit more about her. It sounds like maybe she can do a nice piece in a type of interview like this where people can kind of get some more of her background.
Invite us back, and she can do an interview. Absolutely.
Well, we'll have to take you up on that.
Yeah. No. I think you'd enjoy talking to her about nitty gritty of what goes on. Yeah.
Well, it was fun talking to you about just the mindset of what it takes to start seven different companies and be successful at that. You're very accomplished, very impressive. I feel like I've learned actually quite a bit just talking to you about some of your different philosophies. So I really thank you for taking the time to come sit with us.
Happy to do it. You know, I think it's important that we stimulate all sorts of entrepreneurs. There's still lots of problems out there to solve.
I think Dan might have been wanting to ask this question. We formed our own company, and I think we'd be willing to take a step back if you're looking for an eighth company to be CEO of.
Yes.
Especially if you can bring that fundraising talent.
Pushing out your stomach is impossible. So do you believe your company is possible? If you do, then you don't want it.
It's impossible. I'll never be able to understand futures. Well, normally we like to wrap things up with a little bit of fun, but I think the best that I've got is that, you know, Dan and I think we consider ourselves pretty resourceful. And then I also have a brother who's a very good optical engineer. So I got to ask if you have any simpler inventions or patents that you need developed that you can give to us and we'll take a crack at it. 50-50.
Optical engineering, eh? Yeah, well, we looked at a number of optical solutions for our tracking thing, but we could never find anything that would work as well as what we have. So we invented a more conventional gyroscopic approach. But it's working really well. So optical, I mean, there's lots of optical problems out there.
Well, I mean, I was hoping for something more like, you know, funny glasses or something like that. If you has to extend lives, then we might be out of the running. Unless we can, you know, medicinize laughter. I think that's our best shot.
X-ray specs that help the doctor see right into the body.
Can you do that without burning out the eyeballs?
Well, they use Raman spectroscopy to look at the surface now to differentiate cancer tissue from normal tissue, and that seems to be working very well. So. But, you can't go more than about a millimeter in. So,
right.
Even with ultrasound, the reason cardiac ultrasound is so difficult is because your heart is way down inside your body, so you need a lot of power, you need a lot of sound, and then, of course, this thing called a heart smack in the middle of this big echo chamber called a
rib. Right.
The more sound you can put in, the more reverb you get back out. It's right. 3D so damn hard to get any decent images out of it.
Sounds like you guys have made it work.
No, we have, and that's fine. I mean, I'm just saying that the body does create its own problems about the reason why surgeons have been around for years is because ultimately all you get is The only solution is to cut you open and go inside and fix it, right?
They've been around for thousands of years, but they've only been really good for maybe 50. I wouldn't trust somebody from the 1800s.
Right.
Yeah, those people used to think that blood was formed in your head and flowed down to your feet.
Right, you got too much blood. We need to let some of that out.
The reason why you let some blood out, you got to let it out. You know, that's because you couldn't make blood fast enough.
Yeah. All right, Dan, you got anything else before we wrap this up and let Dr. Adams get on with his, I'm sure, busy day?
Yeah, sure. Thank you again, George, for joining us. While I wasn't here speaking during most of the call, talking, I was able to hear most of it. Very grateful you've been here. Very excited about what VenturePoint is doing. Your philosophy of business to improve lives. It's been an honor to listen and have you on here. We'd love to have you back and Dr. M with you.
Mm-hmm. Mechanovic. We'll add that in post.
Mechanovic. Yes.
Great. All right. Well, the good news, Dan, is we taped where you.
Oh, yeah. I should fix it.
We taped the show so you can go back and listen.
Yep.
Yeah, thank goodness.
All right. What's the stock ticker for people who want to take a look at that? We probably should have mentioned that at the beginning.
Victor Peter Tom, VPT.
VPT. All right. Check it out, guys.
On the TSX Venture Exchange.
And on the American exchanges, that's VPTDF.
Yeah, it's on the OTC and same Victor Peter Tom DF.
Okay. DF, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be moving up to the QB in a couple of weeks, so people will be able to, it'll be easier for people to trade it. And we're getting registered on the digital, archive, digital banks, so you don't. Don't have to deal with share certificates or any of that kind of stuff.
It'll just nice.
Buy and sell like everything else.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Hopefully we'll see you on the NASDAQ here soon.
Yes.
Yeah, I think if we don't get taken out, we'll probably be about the NASDAQ next year.
Yep. And if you're interested in learning more about VenturePoint, you can check them out at their website at VenturePoint.com. We'll have links to that in the episode description. And thanks again to Dr. Adams for joining us. Looking forward to having you back.
Gonna do it for today, folks. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at you soon. Until next time, happy trades.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.